Good evening, friends. It's so good to see your faces and to feel your presences, all of you. It is a great blessing that we come together in this way. And for this, I am deeply grateful. The Christ candle has been lit. A fire is burning. The fire is burning within all of us. With us, in us, as a central being. May we come to know it in its fullness. We do come with a shared intention, not just for ourselves. Our work is affecting our families, our associates, our friends, and the whole world, all humanity, all creation. So again, we remain in the season of Easter. This is the Thursday of the fifth week of Easter. So we might ask ourselves, where are we finding sources of resurrected life? How are we practicing resurrection in daily life? This evening's opening reflection will again come from Jean de Salzman, known as Madame de Salzman, or Alicia Jiangnan in our lives. So it comes from her book, The Reality of Being, The Fourth Way of Gurdjieff. Mrs. de Salzman's date of death was May 24th, 1990. She says, "What do I understand today? And what do I need to understand? Understanding depends on my state of being, on my state of presence. It is absurd to pretend in my sleep that I wish to work, while all the time dreaming that I can. Our efforts to work in life are, first of all, to discover how far we are from our highest possibilities. At the center of our work is the wish to live in a more real way. We can be either an unconscious slave or a conscious servant. So what shall it be? We can start this evening. So now, once again, we just dispose ourselves to come with our wish, our aim, our full intention and attention deeply into the present moment. In order to receive and to do work on the side of knowledge, to have our intellectual center stimulated by what we hear and receive it in some new way, to have our emotional center enlivened with valuation, and to have our bodies sense the truth and goodness of what is being offered. To receive all of it, not in order to understand all of it at this moment, but in order to manifest the Word of God in our own being and receive and manifest what it is ours at this particular moment, knowing that tomorrow we may receive something else. With feet on the floor and back upright, heart open. I hand over the complexities of this day, knowing that they are gifts. I hand over the plans for tomorrow, knowing that they will be addressed. I hand over the anxieties of my heart, knowing that they are known by the one who can do something about them. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. I say yes to life, real life. So our reading, our Lexio reading, will be taken from today's message. It will be read 3 times with a moment of silence between each reading in order for it to move deeper and come to meet us. What is the word or idea or impression for my life now? Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them. If anyone has ears to hear, let them hear." He went on, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person. The healing of the world begins with ourselves." Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them. If anyone has ears to hear, let them listen." He went on, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person. The healing of the world begins with ourselves." Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them. If anyone has ears to hear, let them hear." He went on, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from within and defile a person. The healing of the world begins with ourselves. You are now invited to share as you are moved to do so. So, Sue Young, please.
And it's actually Rusty. And again, it's just the beautiful work idea of what we can bring up to meet an impression. And how we interact with that impression makes all the difference. And if we bring in mechanicality and such, then it leads to the behaviors that Jesus talked about, and just the invitation and the opportunity to bring in an impression and to meet that impression with work ideas in higher parts of center that can make a huge difference.
Thank you, Rusty. Anna.
Actually, Marianne, it's David.
Oh, hi, David.
What landed for me was what comes from within creates evil thoughts. I don't remember exactly how the passage went, but it just speaks to me the concept of, external consider always, internal consider never, right? And the what comes from within is the internal considering of what I'm not getting in this pandemic, or what's not going my way, or it's unfair that my financial safety is being incapacitated. Those types of things. It's when there's a lot of internal considering, what comes from within out is a lot of evil thoughts.
Thank you, David. JC, please.
I thought the whole passage was really a powerful meditation on multiplicity. And the first thing I heard was Jesus gathered the crowd unto him. And I thought about the idea of non-identifying and self-remembering is seeing my crowd and gathering them unto me and becoming familiar with them. And it's not the murderers and the slanderers and the evil people out there that I have to worry about. It is the multiplicity of eyes inside of me that are doing all these things that I look out and see out in the world and think, oh, how terrible. And yet it's the things that are inside me that are, and I also wondered about the word defile. As you think about filing things, you put them in order. So defiling must be the opposite of putting things in order, which would be chaos.
Yes.
And so, how perfect that last week's multiplicity goes into this week's negative emotion and the need to, clean house internally and not worry so much about what's going on out there.
Indeed. Thank you, JC. Jan.
Hey, Marianne.
Hi, Jan.
Nice to see you again.
Yes. Likewise.
So I thought of a whole, you know, first thing that hit me is I had such a valuation for the work. You know, it's like I hear this now and I go, yeah, well, right. Maybe I don't practice it all the time, but I go, right. But there was a time when you could, I mean, this was just foreign to me. And, you know, the work talks about how the first thing we have to do is to control those words coming out of our mouth. And then we're responsible for even thinking those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And how just, you know, if I think a negative thought or I think a negative, I think negatively about somebody, then I create my own hell. You know, and that's me defiling me. You know, I can do that, sitting in my yard with nobody around me, you know, or laying in my bed, you know, so.
So true. So true.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Jan. Billy.
Hello.
Hi, Billy.
Actually, there were two things that came to me in this. The first was, listen to me, everyone. And, of course, the first thing I thought was, oh dear, you know, how often do I not listen to that real conscience inside and, allow the legion of negative eyes to take hold and, do their thing, which is never pretty ever. but the last line, the healing of the world begins with ourselves, begins with me. And, I immediately thought, you know, a kind of, sort of a along the lines of what Rusty was talking about the taking in of impressions. And, I wonder, you know, the outside world, I'm not sure really changes very much at all. And so when I hear the healing of the world, I think, well, perhaps it is my own healing that is allowing me to take the impressions in a different way so that the world does appear to be healing also. I don't know.
Indeed. Thank you, Billy. Thank you. Peter.
Thank you, Marianne. I heard the words defile and healing, and for a long time, I thought that defilement was like related to sin or on an external level. I didn't see the connection to my emotional level. And lately I've been seeing how my negative states, particularly like my enjoyment of being grumpy or irritable, defile me and others perhaps that I may not know, like a bad atmosphere. And, I heard that word defile and it reminded me of the word I underlined this morning in my commentary of identification. And in essence, that's how I heard the word defiled tonight, was that it's whenever I'm identified or, you know, with a negative emotion in particular. And the word healing then all of a sudden became non-identification. And so healing for myself, when I am distanced from that negative emotion, or at least there's so little space in between and not so identified. And that's what I'm working on right this second.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Paco. You just muted yourself, so you need to unmute.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Paco.
So I was sort of struck by the bookends of this excerpt from the gospel. At the beginning, he says that it's not what comes from outside of you that defiles you. And that made me think of the multiplicity. This is how I've come to think of all these eyes, or those ones as I've grown fond of calling them. They really do come from outside. They're sort of, I was talking with my group about it earlier this week, and the way I think of it is that I'm gaining the perspective where when these voices and ideas arise, they're news to me as much as it is whatever somebody else might say to me, literally from outside of me. And so I really, really, really enjoyed the presentation last week from Rodney. And he talked about the idea of, I think there was some talk by Catherine and others about embracing or incorporating the multiplicity and not rejecting it outright. And I think that the idea of realizing that it's not outright toxic, but then when you look at the other end of that, the bookend, if you will, the last line is that, you know, it is ourselves. Saving the world starts with ourself. And I heard real eye there. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing kind of a combination of acknowledging, embracing, knowing it's coming from outside of us, all that multiplicity, but also knowing that the essence of how we can contribute to the world is through our real eye.
Thank you, Paco. Thank you. So we have time for one more. Nicole.
It's interesting because I think I heard him with old ears, because I always have this thought of when it says it comes from a person's heart. And I always think of my thoughts not as my thought. They're not my thoughts. You know, they're kind of cosmic or universal thoughts that just float by me, you know? So in processing that, originally it just landed negatively. So I think it's what my heart does with the impressions is what I came to. Because the thoughts can pass through, but I can't remember the word, the contort that we burn. What is it called? That we have something that we burn. There's a scientific word. I need Anna's help here. So it's taking in the impressions, I guess, and then what I do with the impressions. But I have a hard time saying that they come from my heart. I guess that just kind of made me feel icky. Because I saw that picture of the Milwaukee or the Wisconsin people going to a bar last night once the rules were lifted. I'm anchoring this outside of myself as Donald. And I had that negative thought of, I hope they get sick. I was like, whoa, you know, that's an I living in me. But I don't want to say that I'm defiled because I had that thought, you know. So, luckily, I had my wife's son with me at the moment who directed me back to love. And I was able to use it, I guess, to, you know, transform into a positive impression.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Not impression, a positive, just transform that into, from, yes, you know, disgust into love. So
good. Thank you, Nicole. And thank you for everyone who has shared, and for everyone, because all of our impressions are in our collective, so we could just take them in and allow them to do their silent work. So this evening we move from the idea that we are not one, but legion, into the realm of negative emotions and violence within this legion. So I'm very pleased to introduce Pamela Begeman, who will take us on this journey of discovery. Please, Pamela.
Thank you, Mary Ann, and good evening, everybody. Some of you have already recognized that there is a very clear bridge between the multiplicity and negative emotion. And this week, a prayer came to meet me that I'd like to start with that speaks of both of those topics. And as you listen, I invite you to let this settle into your being on deeper and deeper levels, to be open, receptive, in inner stillness, with the observer, the witness, the light, present to whatever may come up. This is a prayer that is said to come from Mother Teresa. Deliver me, O Jesus, from the desire of being loved, from the desire of being extolled, from the desire to be honored, from the desire of being praised, from the desire of being preferred, from the desire of being consulted, from the desire of being approved, from the desire of being popular, from the fear of being humiliated, from the fear of being despised, from the fear of suffering rebukes, from the fear of being calumniated, from the fear of being forgotten, from the fear of being wronged, from the fear of being ridiculed, from the fear of being suspected, O God, come to my assistance. O Lord, make haste to help me. Amen. So that's a big prayer, but I think it's a prayer that points to what this work is all about. About absolute honesty about our interior state, about absolute responsibility for what arises, but all in the acknowledgement that we are never separate from God, and this is a sacred process. So I'd like to share on the screen our homework for last week. And Rodney gave us such a beautiful teaching of that homework. And certainly if we had any difficulty in finding the multiplicity within, we could go back to that wonderful list that he gave us at the beginning of class of all the different eyes within himself. And if you're interested in that list, it's in the class notes on the CCH website. So we were asked, can you hear, feel, and sense the multiplicity of eyes within? And so some of those eyes were enumerated in the prayer we just heard. And while observing the multiplicity and how it mechanically plays out in daily life, can you now feel compassion towards others, knowing that they too are a multiplicity? And so we were asked in all of our interactions this week, in our work on the side of being, to practice seeing the multiplicity, and in doing so, to let our friends and our family, our colleagues, off the hook instead of taking offense or judging. So one of the things that came to me as a personal example, I'll start us off with sharing tonight, is the way that I see the multiplicity most clearly is in indecision. And before I came to this work, and at the beginning of the work, the state of indecision was chronic in me. I mean, absolutely chronic. In fact, when Michael and I first started dating, he actually set an aim for me that I had to make all the decisions about where we would go to dinner, and it literally killed eyes in me because they could not decide. They could not choose. The multiplicity was so fragmented. There was no center, and the multitude of eyes just swirled around, and decisions were impossible. And maybe that's why now I love the contemplative practice of discernment, because I've actually been given a tool to sort through those eyes in a prayerful, sacred way, bringing them all into the light and praying with them so that the dust settles and something higher can come through and inform me. But it took a long time of working and seeing those eyes to see the truth of them, and then to step aside from them. So let's hear from you. What did you discover? How did you see the multiplicity, or how were you able to see it in another and have compassion? JC, please.
I remember in my sort of earlier days in the work, the practice of self-observation and seeing an eye was something that happened very rarely, and when it did, it was like an isolated, like, oh yeah, there's an eye, I see it, look at that. And it was sort of that way for many years. And the rhythm of being in the Journey School this year has been such a gentle wave of transformation, that what I'm seeing now is that one week just blends smoothly into the next. And what I'm seeing now is that, first of all, I've mentioned this before, like I'm almost always identified. Mm-hmm. It's not, it randomly happens and I notice it. I'm almost always identified. And, you know, I used to think eyes were sort of like these solitary things that popped up here and there. And now it's more like, you know, looking at ACL Festival in Zilker Park. Mm-hmm. There's just like hordes of them. And they are in layers. And so what I'm seeing is that I will often like notice like a whole layer of identification. And most of mine, I love what you said about indecision, because I've always felt that conflict between these different groups of eyes that render me completely useless and helpless. Man cannot do anything. And what I'm seeing is that now I can get below some of those layers, and then I hit a layer that is like so hard and so packed down and so, you know, they're so old, they're so near the core of my being that it doesn't feel like I can penetrate them with simple non-identification and self-remembering. Like, it's like that's the place where, you know, what Donald shared a couple of weeks ago about, you know, seeing the critical eye that sort of like criticizes the self-observation. Like, I've got like a you know, concrete packed in layers of that. And it's like the only thing that gives me hope is noticing that like grass and flowers can grow through that. Right? There's something under there that's alive and that wants to be out in the sunshine and wants to be in nature. And I can, you know, that feeling of despair and fear and just I don't want to do anything. It can last for days at a time. And it's like I'm now recognizing that I'm at another level, and I just have to keep going. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I wanted to mention was that there's been this great thread of conversation going past the last couple of weeks in this class and in my journey group about, you know, in internal family systems, they talk about all these different parts of you. Mm-hmm. And all of the parts think that they're helping you. And so there's always been this thing about like, you know, somebody, Carly or somebody was talking about integrating these eyes and sort of showing them compassion. Whereas Nichols, like, you know, these are not your friends. They're here to kill you. And what I've been sort of feeling my way into is that it seems like we have relationships with these eyes, but they can't be addictive or codependent relationships. Mm. And when they are, I'm stuck to them. And I can look at these eyes with compassion, but I can't play their game.
Yeah.
And so that has really helped me sort of like, oh, I got to get rid of all these negative eyes. You know, I mean, that doesn't work for me. That keeps me identified.
Right.
And so, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I work with a lot of people in addiction. It's like, you can't be codependent. You have to be responsible for your emotions, and that person over there has to be responsible for their emotions. So it's sort of applying that idea to the concept of multiplicity that I can care and wish the best for all these eyes, but I can't play their game. I can't be stuck in fear and indecision and depression because I can't get through that last layer. So,
yes. Well, there was a lot in what you said. I mean, first of all, the work has definitely evolved since Nichols started.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that wisdom teachers, especially when you're, you know, starting out and putting a stake in the ground, they use hyperbole to get people's attention. And he was talking to the upper class of his time, the bourgeois people who were very comfortable.
Yeah.
And so fast forward to now, there's a lot more understanding of psychology. And you're right, it's not setting up a second force within us. We don't want to have an oppositional relationship. That just creates more positionality, more energy of resistance, which we're going to talk about later. So now it's about shining the light, isn't it? And that's what you're saying, is there's more light now. There's more light. And there's definitely more light in community because we help each other remember. We come here every Thursday night and we reaffirm our intention. We come to our journey groups every week. We reaffirm that intention. We talk to our work partners. We set aim. We keep that flame alive that Marianne mentioned. And you're right, then the grass grows, and it might grow more slowly than we wish, but it does. So thank you. Okay, Anna or David, please.
It's me. Hello, everybody. What I've noticed about multiplicity and observing, self-observation, particularly looking at all the eyes, the one that I think I forget the most, that JC just mentioned, is the critic. The critic seems to hone in on my program of happiness. When you were reading the prayer earlier, I can hear the critic going, see, yeah, look at that, huh? You're not it, are you? You know, and you can hear that. And in observing an eye, it's okay to observe it, but I kept forgetting to look and turn towards the critic, which then pulls me right into identification, feeling badly. So I can really see why or how I would react negatively to the person who happens to show me my eye and go, whoa. And I thought, okay, that's just mirroring. And that's because I forget to look at the critic. Mm. And some of the best places to look at, to do self-observation for me, is on social media or even in the news. I choose, though, these days to enter into that place consciously. I knew that going into turning on something would trigger something inside of me, righteousness, anger, whatever it is. I need to look at it and observe that eye, then turn to the critic and say, you're not the boss of me. You know, having a conversation with the critic for some reason seems to help put it further away from me.
Yeah.
Rather than it in me. So I have to inwardly turn to the critic and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I see you, not today. You know, those kind of things before I get too identified. And that's the only way I find that I can non-identify. Mm-hmm. And breathe, externally consider, self-remember. But the critic for me is absolutely, you know, critical. And learning to say, you're not the boss of me. My children taught me that, by the way.
Yeah, my kids said the same thing. I love how you so carefully said that someone showed my eye to me. That's beautifully said. It keeps the ownership right here. And yes, your tool, the way you're using you're not the boss of me and talking to the inner critic, is such a great way to really constate that inner separation. Because there's a conversation going, right? You're turning the light very clearly on it and saying, this is not I. And I hear you, and no thank you. And the other clue is, at least for me, is if the observing is happening, there's just light and there's no voice. The critic always has a voice, always. So I know that that's not observing eye speaking. That's, as you said, another part of the multiplicity. And that one has deep roots, sometimes generational roots. So it's big stuff to digest.
Mm-hmm. I think it's critically important in the marketplace. and I think we all live in the marketplace, we choose to be in the marketplace, is so critical to look at the critics.
Right. So it doesn't get projected out. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue or Rusty, please.
Oh, goodness. It's Rusty. And I had a conversation 2 days ago with a person that I first met about 11 years ago. And at that time, she was hosting a open mic. And it was my very early stages of getting out and trying to play outside of my bedroom. And I carried this story and my impression that I that just ruled this memory was this one of this person that would come up and introduce whoever they were introducing and then would go off into the corner and yuck it up with some friends. And then that person would play and then come out again. And she would come out and introduce the next person and go back and yuck it up with her friends. And I just, that I thought that was very impolite and very insincere and how she comported herself. So I had this story all built around her. And it wasn't like we saw a lot of each other, but it was just something that just lingered and stuck. And through happenstance, we connected a couple of days ago and we're having a conversation totally unrelated. And I could just see that I that was kind of just having this low grade conversation and just continue the conversation. And then out of the blue, I'd like to think, there was a statement that came out and it was, you know, I don't know if you know this, but you've held space for something, you know, that really got me started, you know, playing music, live. And I really appreciate the opportunity that you provided to get me started doing that. And it led to a lot of incredible things in my life, including, meeting my wife and, everything else. And it just completely transformed that relationship. And it was another eye, I think a little bit deeper that, that saw what couldn't be seen. I don't know about her motivation. I ascribe so much based upon that experience 11 years ago. And she had her multiplicity. She was doing whatever she was doing. And who's to say whatever she was doing was inappropriate?
Mm-hmm.
She was just there. And she was providing the space for people to go up there and play some music. And it was something that I could look back on with extraordinary appreciation and feel like I was able to exercise this little eye that has just been, you know, very inflammatory about that early, early experience and very grateful for it.
Well, gratitude is a very powerful third force.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful third force. It does wonders for cleaning the slate.
Indeed.
Thank you. Brett, please.
I was hoping you wouldn't call me. I was about to call. But I want to kind of piggyback on what JC said as far as seeing the continuity in all the teachings. And whoever put together this work that we're participating in has done a perfect job. It's always come about at the appropriate time. So thank you. Mm-hmm. And like JC and Anna and Rusty shared, you know, working on first line and seeing the multiplicity in themselves and seeing it in others allowed them to open up. I did something a lot smarter. Rather than working on first line, I jumped right to second line.
Mm.
In the multiplicity in other people and what I don't like, you know, which is not good. So What happened in the past week was I decided to cut off relationships with a very close family member and two very close friends, because the multiplicity of eyes I see in them, there's a lot of good, and there's some unshakable different beliefs about morals and values that I can't get past. I have that this one experiences trouble accepting. And rather than seeing those individuals as a single unwavering I as being, you know, good or bad or asleep or not asleep, I've had so much difficulty in my conversations with them in getting past those views that they hold, which are so different than my views of morals, that I decide to stop having relationship with them, which kind of gets into this coming week's homework of violence. Mm-hmm. And, my violent act was not seeing them as a singularity, acknowledging the multiplicity, but also realizing that there's by not accepting them. And it's not to a point where I have to accept their beliefs or agree with it. It's more of a forgiveness, not because I agree with them or, you know, acknowledge them, but allowing myself to heal and get past that. It's a little hard when I'm still in the midst of things where these things are still happening, you know, day to day. There's a new atrocity going on, and it's just so confrontational all around us. That for now, it's better for this one to take a step back. Maybe after things change in November, it'll be a little easier to have more conversations. But I'm working on violence and allowing myself to understand multiplicity in others and accept those things and forgive what I have difficulty with.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your honesty, Brett. And I hear a man in process with a deep wish and someone who understands that this is a process and isn't crystallized and is open to the evolution of things. And that's fine. And you're doing it with the lights on and realizing the difficulties on both sides, yours and theirs. So that's big work. That's big work. And as always with families, as we often say here, we're not just doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for our whole system and for every other family that's going through exactly the same thing. And when one of us decides to do the deep work, we all benefit from that. It's hard to see that and know that, but we have to believe, knowing at the deepest level that we are one, that that's happening. So bless you as you stand in the light. Thank you. We have so many of you who'd like to speak. We'll take one more, and then we need to move on. So Catherine Kuchar, please.
Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
I have been doing inquiry with a girlfriend, and this was such a gift of a homework assignment because Byron Katie has these workshops, Judge Your Neighbor worksheets.
Mm-hmm.
So I get in a place, I fill out a worksheet on a specific person, and then she's like, okay, do you mind reading me the worksheet? So I read the worksheet. I'm like, oh my gosh, this makes this person sound terrible. And they're really not that bad, but I'm really stuck here. And that was the first realization of, wow, there is a whole set of eyes that saw this person as like, they're this, I'm annoyed by blah, 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 blah. And it was just so helpful to have multiplicity as homework to immediately recognize in that state, those eyes had the microphone and they believed that to be true. Mm-hmm. And now that you're in a different state and you're hearing this, you're like, that's not true. Then we go through the worksheet and we get through to the turnaround. And I loved how Anna said the other person showed me an eye that I had, because as soon as I did that, I did that to myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was so humbling because like, oh my gosh, these eyes, they just go and go and go. I had a really humbling week with this assignment, and I just felt it was such a gift.
Yeah. Thank you. The thing that you brought up is nothing is ever lost in the light of self-observation. So even though there's big energy, which you got some of it out by writing it on paper and doing that worksheet and then sharing it with a spiritual companion, nothing is lost because the light is still on. And sometimes we need to get on the other side of the big energy before we really see clearly. So we are insane for a while. And then some sanity comes back in. And then we can see, oh my God, I'm crucifying this person. For right. what? For what? But I have to own that. And sometimes the energy just needs to pass so I can really just see that. And as you said, to be humble in that scene. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Okay, friends, let's move on to the topic of negative emotions, and in particular, the violence of negative emotions. And Rodney set us up beautifully when he read that commentary on the difficult to cross ditch. And of course, he was using it to set up the multiplicity. But when we are identified in the multiplicity, violence is inevitable and negativity is inevitable. And the whole point of that dream that Nicol had was what struck him about the lieutenant or the colonel who was with these recruits who were just all over the place, you know, not listening, in their own multiplicity, going every which way. And the colonel was a man without violence. He seemed completely unmoved by what was before him, obviously not working for results. But what struck Nicol is that he was a man without violence. And as I reflected on that this week, I thought, how many people have I met that are people without violence? Less than 5. And I've met some really extraordinary people in my life. Less than 5. So here we are, and that's the work. And that's where it gets serious in terms of taking responsibility for the atmosphere that we create and how we are in our relationships. I remember when I first met Michael, and he and I were working together in a large corporation, and I was really curious about his being. I had never met anyone like him before. And as I began to ask questions about what he practiced and the work and all of that, I remember saying to him across the desk in his office, I don't have any negative emotions. I don't have any negativity. That was a woman asleep. And then, of course, once I entered the work and the lights came on, I could see it clearly. And I could see who said that and who really believed that there was not negativity. And I began to understand that I and the motivation behind that I. And also the victim mentality that kept me thinking that I was a person without violence and the violence was outside of me. And I loved what Marianne read from Madame de Salzman. Are we an unconscious slave or a conscious servant? And certainly I can be a slave to my negativity. And in fact, there was an event last fall where I was so blinded by righteousness and felt so justified. I was absolutely blind to the negativity until some friends in the work very gently shone the light on what was occurring. But that justification was such a buffer to seeing the negativity. So the vigilance required and the self-honesty required to day after day see what's coming up and see where it could go, actually, if unchecked, requires a lot of force. And the thing about negativity is that the more we're negative, the more it drains our force. And the more our force is drained, the less hydrogens we have to self-observe, non-identify, and self-remember. And so it becomes a cycle. We just don't have the being to wake up in it, the more that negativity basically sucks our life force, really. So I want to share on the screen some of the key points that are in today's lesson. And one of the things that the work says is that it's not sex or money or power that rule the world. It's negative emotions. And in fact, the work might even say that what's really wrong with the world is that we all agree and dance with negative emotions as if it's okay. And imagine a world without negative emotions. I think a lot of the isms that are so disturbing to us wouldn't be there. So it's really at the heart of things from the standpoint of the work. And again, so we're not creating a polarity within ourselves. To see a negative emotion arise does not mean that it's bad. It is simply a way that we learned to resist life. It's a no to life. It's a resistance to what is. And that really recontextualizes negative emotions for me. And that resistance is learned. We are trained to say yes and no, good or bad. I want this. I don't want this. This is okay. This is not okay. This is my preference. I'm upset when I don't get my way. We're trained to do that. We watch all the adults in our lives play it out from the time we're born. But the thing that is really hard to see, and it takes a while through self-observation, is that all negative emotions lie and distort impressions that are coming into us. They distort our relationships. They distort our self-view. They distort other people. But the work is really unequivocal. All negative emotions lie, not some. There's not some that are telling the truth, all. So that's very clear. And because of this distortion, negative emotions interfere with the digestion of all three foods. And in the work, we have the food of air, we have the food of nutrition, and we have the food of impressions. And when we're negative, we don't breathe deeply. We don't digest and uptake nutrition properly. And we certainly don't receive impressions in a pure way. And some of you are familiar with the diagrams of digestion in volume one. And it literally shows how energies are impacted when we're negative. And essentially, we walk around in a state of imbalance and dis-ease. And here's the thing that some of us have already talked about. No one causes us to be negative. The negativity arises within us for which we alone are responsible. So I used to say all the time, so-and-so made me mad. Nobody made me anything. As Anna so carefully said, someone showed me something about myself just now, if the lights are on. And the other thing is that we really have to see for ourselves. We have to see and verify all of this. But we unconsciously love our negative emotions because of the juice we get. And for me, the easiest example of that is the feeling of being right. There's a lot of juice that I experience in being right. And then the justifications all line up for why it's okay to be right. And there's all of the facts, you know, so-called facts about why I'm right, and I can get others to agree with me, and the juice just keeps coming. And Nichol says, we love our negative emotions. And it's hard to see that at first, but with ongoing self-observation, I can admit that's true. We talked about that it drains our life force, and in fact, they feed on us. They're lower energy realms that literally feed on our life force. And we'd want to know this. And we'd want to know that they do not have our best interest in mind. And this is something I came across in the commentary, and I pondered this for a while, and it's so true that when we are negative, we remember only unpleasant things. So again, it distorts our whole view of the past. All of our memories are distorted by our negativity. And that's why the work has this wonderful teaching and practice that we can heal the past and the future when we become conscious of ourselves, that it goes backwards and forwards because those distortions are healed. As Richard Rohr says, we clean the lens and we see everything differently. But if we don't work, if we don't wake up, if we don't own our negativity, negative emotions lead to violence. And it's not too strong of a word to use the word violence. That's not an overstatement. I'm sure you've had arguments with people that you absolutely love that have been very bitter. I'm sure there have been times, I know I do, when I have said things that I regret because I let something build up in me. Without the lights on, without non-identification and self-remembering. And I have to see that the negativity or violence I see in another is in me. And I remember specifically working with an individual that I had all kinds of judgments about. And I was really trying to apply the work idea of it's got to be in me. It's got to be in me. And I looked for the longest time, I mean years, trying to digest these attitudes and judgments. And it took years. And finally, I saw it. The way it was in me was a little bit different. And that's why it took so long. But there was such a measure of, some of you know the term hasnamis in me. There was somebody, there was an I in me who really did not have the well-being of this person in mind. In fact, was plotting little ways of planning this person's demise. And I had to be very honest about that. And once that was seen, all of the energy between us was gone. And I could just bow to this person that thank you, God, that you showed that to me. So this is something that Marianne had in the Lexio. Work on our own violence decreases the violence manifesting in our homes and in our world. The healing of the world begins with ourselves. And I would say that this is one of the most powerful forms of social action that we can take. I'm sure many of you, I know I have often wondered, what should I be doing in the world? How can I help? How can I contribute? I'm not doing enough, but actually very, very few people are called to this level of social action. Very few people are actually willing to step up and to say, you know what, the buck stops here. Until every bit of negativity is gone in me. Integrated in me, held up in me, in the light in me. That's my piece of the world to work on. There is a quote from Eckhart Tolle in today's email, and he says, the fact is that negativity doesn't work. But we think it does, doesn't it? If I say something, if I make a fuss, in politics, it seems if I yell more, if I call my opponent names, that this is the way things work. This is the way to get my way. This is the way to take a stand. But instead of creating change or attracting a desirable condition, it stops it from arising. And we all know that is second force. Instead of dissolving an undesirable one, it keeps it in place. There's no third force. And so all of this must be verified in ourselves. We can't just take this as a teaching on the side of knowledge. We have to see it for ourselves. Now, in the email today, there were also a number of tools, which you can see here on the screen. I'm not going to go through them, but help is available. Help is available. Thanks be to God. And applying these tools build over time. For example, if we look at the second one, wish and daily aims, the more that we wish to see and make aims, the more that our conscience is strengthened and willing to see what is occurring within. The more that we self-observe over time, the more that we see, and we see the nuances of it. Like in my example with this relationship, we develop an inner taste. Even at the point when we can feel negativity arising and we can make a choice, I don't have to go there. I smell you. I see you. I know you. I know where this leads. This is going to lead to some snarky comment about how my husband's loading the dishwasher or something. we get that, we get the trail of it after a while, and it becomes easier to say, I have a right not to be negative, and to just turn away from it. And the bodies become a great tool of sniffing those negative emotions before they blow up. So the bodies will tell us very, very quickly when the triggers have gone off. And that's what the welcoming prayer teaches us. We don't have to go into our heads. We don't have to go into negativity. We can just drop into the body and feel it and be with it, accept it, pray with it. And it's energy in motion. It does move. We don't stay in negativity. Have you noticed it has a beginning, a middle, and an end? And just the last one, and JC talked about this a little bit, and also Anna touched on it with the inner critic. When we come upon very deep-seated pockets of negativity, we can pray, because sometimes that's all we can do. We pray for help. And Nicole, I think in the back of Simple Explanation of Work Ideas, there's a little chart where he kind of in a very simplistic form gives different things you can do with negative emotions. But one of the things he said is when you come to things like hatred or very deep-seated fear, prayer and self-remembering. O God, come to my assistance. O Lord, make haste to help me. So I'm going to stop now and just ask if you have any questions, how this has come to meet you. Maybe what I might say is, while this can seem very heavy, it is not an indictment. It's actually the good news. These are our keys to get out of prison. Nicole, please.
I was grateful. Well, that's one of my favorite work aphorisms is, all negative emotions lie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a reminder to me that I used to practice cutting off my head when I was negative. Mm. Because anything that comes in my head is going to help that negative emotion align all the truths to prove itself to be right.
Right.
And so I appreciate that reminder of it's a great time for an inner stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it also reminds me, for some reason, I don't know, the horse and the carriage, you know, the heart and the brain don't speak the same language.
Mm-hmm.
So visualizations, and that's a great time to bring in a positive visualization to help, you know, to connect.
Yes.
The love that I wish to have in my heart that I'm praying for, you know, thank you.
Yeah, and that's really, that brings up future memory, because future memory is a creative use of imagination where I wish to be different and can send that wish forward to meet me because I know it's going to recur. Thank you. Leanne, please.
I guess I remember the welcoming prayer being much longer, and so when you mentioned dropping into your body, I really appreciated that because I have experienced dropping into my body, and just doing that and the negativity, it dissipates much faster that way.
Yes.
And because when I try to attack it from my brain, it's, you know, it can go on and go down a lot of rabbit holes, but the body just doesn't seem to have all of that. It's just much more simple.
That's right. That's right. And the welcoming prayer used to be more of a verbal prayer, but over time it's been much more simplified to a body prayer. And I mean, you use the word attack. When I try to attack the emotions, that's what the brain does. It just starts to argue and tries to work its way out of a maze that it's too far gone. But the body is neutral. And if we can just be in the energy of the body, we can watch and ride that wave, and the energy dissipates in a very loving light.
And I've noticed it can dissipate almost immediately. It's like, oh, that's there, and now it's not.
Right.
So I really appreciate you mentioning that again.
Thank you. Thank you, Lynn.
Clarifying that for me.
Frank Ivy, please. Go ahead, Frank. Let's see. You just, can you unmute yourself, Frank?
I did.
There you go.
This entire evening's study takes this one back to first coming to the Church of Conscious Harmony and having a belief that this one was gentle, not violent, awake, conscious, caring. And lo and behold, slowly it's revealed to this one how asleep, mechanical, violent, arrogant this one is, and how each of a number of eyes propagate violence. And they're eyes that this one used to think were good things to have, righteous things to have, necessary things to have if there would be any change in the world. It is, you know, the depth at which is available to us in these studies of violence, of the books that we've been given to read about violence. Totally unveil to some degree, I mean, one of them is called unveiled, but they have opened up for this one of things that this one never thought was there. I mean, the eyes that this one still sees today are almost always negative eyes, and can bring them up very easily in interacting with the world.
Yeah.
But it sees them. It holds them in the light. And it recognizes it more and more. This one's driving has become way more gentle. A period of time that I've been studying the work. And I think this one's response to others has become much more passive and much less arrogant. Because those eyes were very dominant to this one. And very troublesome and very much in the way of learning anything. I'm grateful.
Well, thank you for affirming the work works, Frank. We'll take one more. Duberly, please. Go ahead, Duberly. Need to unmute. There you go. Okay, we're having issues. Jack and Jackie, go ahead. Jack and Jackie, are you there? It says you're unmuted.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
So what I, over time, all of my negative emotions, I cannot find one that isn't rooted in fear. Fear is the foundation for every single one. I can't find one that isn't. And So there's two things over time is that I find myself being very mechanical, and I learn a new catchphrase or a new way of looking at or a new way of non-identifying from time to time that just all of a sudden enlivens my non-identification myself. And I want to honor Deborah Hill Sunday when she was talking about the good witch in The Wizard of Oz. And she said, "Be gone. You have no powers here." And that's my mantra when I'm, it's just invigorated that. And the truth is they have no powers because they are not real. They're absolutely not real. They seem so real. There's nothing to them.
Yeah.
And so thank you, Deborah, and thank you, the work.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack. That's beautiful. Thank you for reminding us of that. Okay, friends, we've come to the end of our time, so let me just share this week's homework, which is in today's email. So the invitation is to observe recurring negative emotions as a no to life, drawing on the idea that no one causes us to be negative, knowing the negativity arises within us as a mechanical reaction for which we alone are responsible. And then which negative energy pattern are you called to work with now? And use one or more of the tools that are suggested in the email or others. Like Jack just gave us a beautiful image. And work with delight. Practice self-remembering. So take it all the way home into the light. Thank you and bless you.
Thank you, Pamela. So we'll close with Rodney Collin. This is the Kairos time, the time of exceptional opportunity for those who want to acquire will, love, and reason. A great change is approaching, in which positive forces must balance negative ones. The positive radiations emitted by people of goodwill collect the neutral ones emitted by ultra-heavy matter and form them into a protective barrier like a kind of jelly that absorbs and neutralizes negative radiations. We project all the time either negativeness or positiveness. To positive irradiations are added neutral ones in proportion to the strength of the positive ones. We do not realize how much our projections affect other people. We do not realize the responsibility we have for everything we project. We have to project positiveness. Negativeness flows out of us and reflects on other people. It affects thousands of people all over the world. If we have positive radiations, they help not only us, but other people. Also all over the world. We must be very careful to project sincerity and strength. If we project positive radiations, we can leave their distribution to God. And may it be so. Let us join together in praying aloud and affirming what we know is the prayer of God's love. God's love has met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake. Watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.